The John Daly Show, Sports.
And hi, everyone. It is Tuesday, October 27th, opening day for the 111th World Series. The Mets and the Royals take the field in Game 1 in Kansas City. This is our second World Series show. Yesterday, I spoke with Texas Rangers pitching coach Mike Maddux. Today, we have former major leaguer and now Yankee broadcaster Ken Singleton. Ken also has his own celebrity golf event, which I attend each year. We will tell you more about that and a lot more as well. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Pleasure to talk to you, as always. Just saw you about last month, and we had a lot of fun at the tournament, and now it's World Series time.
It definitely is. Let's break down the series. Tough to call. I think this goes six or seven. I'm going with KC, their experience, team speed, ability to hit power pitching, and middle relief. Now, you've seen both teams this season. What are you seeing? What are you predicting?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very entertaining series to start with. Number one, you have two teams that are playing very well, two teams that really had to earn their way to this point in the season. I'm kind of leaning towards Kansas City, and I'll tell you why. And it's because of more or less because of what happened to them last year. I always feel the team that comes up just short the year before, if they get a chance to redeem themselves, so to speak, they are very tough the next year. And I think Kansas City falls into that category after losing in seven games to the Giants last year. At home in Kansas City, they had the home field advantage, and they still lost. They have the home field advantage this year. I know the Mets can be tough. I always felt this year if the Mets got into the playoffs, they'd be tough to get out because of their pitching. And that holds true. They've gotten to the point where they're almost the last team standing. So I'm going to lean towards Kansas City. I think their hitters make a lot of contact. They've struck out the fewest times in the major leagues. So I don't think the hard throwers are going to bother them all that much. I think they can run pitch counts up for the Mets starters by fouling pitches off and keeping at-bats going. That's the type of team they are.
You know, you touched on a couple of real interesting things. The stats seem to bear out that the Royals actually hit power pitching better. You saw the Yankees and their power pitchers this season against the Royals. Does that stand up?
Well, yeah, it does. The Royals are just, I thought at the beginning of the season, going way back at the spring training, that they were the best team in the league. I felt as though if they could remain healthy, and younger teams have a tendency to do that, and it bore out for them. They didn't have all that many injuries to deal with outside of their closer, Greg Holland, who unfortunately had to undergo Tommy John surgery. But basically, their team has remained healthy during the course of the year. I know Alex Gordon was out for a while, but he's back and healthy now and playing in the World Series. And he can become a free agent at the end of the year. So what better stage to show off what you can do under the bright lights where if anybody wants to watch baseball, and this is what I remember from my playing days, if you're a baseball fan, you want to watch baseball, that's the only game you can watch. And you're under the bright lights from fans all over the world, so to speak.
Yeah, and talk again about the psychology, because I talked to Mike Maddux yesterday, and one of the things I brought up with him was, you know, the Rangers got there twice and then, you know, had two heartbreaks in a row.
Yeah.
How difficult is it, or is it easy once you've been there because you had the experience of losing a World Series and knowing what to do?
Well, I played in a couple of World Series myself, John, and the first one we lost. And we lost a tough World Series to the Pirates back in 1979 when we were up 3-1 and we lost. Pirates rallied to win the last three behind Willie Stargell, who was the MVP of the World Series. But when we got back to the World Series 4 years later, we got in the same situation. We were up 3-1 against the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think we all remembered what had happened the previous time, and we put it away in the fifth game, and we won the World Series 4-1. In fact, that year, 1983, the Phillies won the first game, and we won the next four. And to this day, I think we are the only or the last team to win the World Series by sweeping in the opposing city. We split at home, losing opener, then winning the second game at home, then winning the next three in Philadelphia. And I think we are the last team to do that way back in 1983.
Wow. Yeah, and probably the last team to win the final four games. I know the Mets did it against the Orioles in 69. You were with the organization then. Were you on that team, by the way?
No, I was not. I didn't get to Baltimore until, in fact, I wasn't even in big leagues yet. I didn't get to Baltimore until 1975. I got traded from Montreal to Baltimore, which was truly, John, the break of my career. Montreal was more or less an expansion team in those days, and we had players that were either over the hill or kind of coming into their own. And I fell into the latter category, and I got to Baltimore, and I realized what winning baseball was all about, playing on a winning team, how team came first, playing for a Hall of Fame manager in Earl Weaver, Hall of Fame players on the team like Brooks Robinson and Jim Pond.
And we are talking with Ken Singleton, former Major League player with the Mets, Expos, and Orioles. He now works for the YES Network covering the New York Yankees. Hey, do you have one? Oh, we lost you, Ken. Okay, well, Ken just dropped off the air there. I was going to ask him about any great stories that he might have as far as Earl Weaver goes. Hopefully we're going to get Ken back. As you heard, he was talking about he thinks also, like me, that the Kansas City Royals are going to be favored in this series, so hopefully we're going to get him back and have him talk about this. And now that's the problem with cell phones today, folks, is sometimes it just doesn't get you the chance to stay on the line as much as you'd want. So hopefully he's going to get a chance to call back in and we can get him back on the phone here and we can have him call in. What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to text him right now so we can get him back on the air and we can talk about a lot of different things, because some of the stuff that Kenny's talking about, since he's actually seen both these teams, both the Royals and the Mets, as a Yankee broadcaster, and hopefully we're going to get him back on the air here, because I got some things I want him to talk about as far as how to use these power pitchers, how the Mets have done it. I also want to talk about the Yankees. I want to talk about what's going on with them. They kind of petered out towards the end of the season. And, you know, me as a Red Sox fan, one of the things that I had always said earlier in the year, I thought the Yankees were going to peter out, and kudos to them. They actually did very, very well throughout the season, and they didn't peter out really till late September, and that's when they started hitting the wall there. So hopefully we can get Kenny back on here. Who knows, he might have been in a bad cell area, but we'll see. Kenny, you still
I'm
there,
back.
Buddy? All right,
yeah, I'm
cool.
Back.
Yeah. Sorry I missed you there. Okay, and hopefully there was nothing I did over here. Hey, I was just going to ask you before I lost you, do you have one funny Earl Weaver story?
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Give me your best.
Okay, Earl was, well, first of all, umpires disliked Earl immensely. he was always on their case. He felt the umpires were just out there for one reason, that was to make things difficult as they could for the Baltimore Orioles. But I can recall he could embarrass you in front of the team, and he wouldn't hesitate to do so if it screwed up. One day in Chicago, I dropped a fly ball, routine fly ball, and I dropped it. The White Sox didn't even score. So I thought, you know, okay, it's over with. Well, I came back to the bench. I sat down, and here comes Earl. He's walking down to me. He says, "What's going on out there?" And I said, "Earl, I got no excuse. I just dropped the ball. They didn't even score." He said, "That's not the point. You're supposed to catch the ball." I said, "Do you think I want to look bad in front of 35,000 fans here in Chicago?" He says, "Well, that's exactly the way you looked. You looked terrible." And I said, "Well, Earl, it's not like I do this all the time." And I said, by the way, Earl, I'm supposed to hit this inning. You better just let me concentrate on hitting. You might need me to drive in a run." He said, "Yeah, oh, you're right. Go ahead."
but he knew what was
important. His whole thing, John, to be honest with you, he used to have a saying, the games don't have to be pretty, they just have to be wins. So he didn't care how you did it, just as long as you won the games. I mean, here's a manager, a Hall of Fame manager. He has a career winning percentage of .583. So he had some good pitchers, he had some good hitters, he had some very good teams. He'd be the first to tell you that. But he knew how to maneuver his players and who could do what on his club. And it was a pleasure to play for him, although, as I said, he can get on your case in a hurry.
Great story. Hey, let's talk a little Yankees now.
Okay.
And actually, no, before we get into the Yankees, I want to ask you about the scheduling here. Do you think this is too late to play a World Series?
Ooh, we're pushing the envelope. You're exactly right. I mean, the World Series is going to end in November this year. That's, to me, that's not good. Although I was reading something from the commissioner yesterday who said it's better to go longer than to start earlier because the weather, it has a tendency to be better towards the end of the year than it could be at the beginning of the year in various cities. People have suggested, well, why don't you start all the games or the season in all the warm weather cities or in the dome stadiums? And he said, well, that's not particularly fair to everybody else every year to do it that way. So one way they're going to do it is going to go a little bit further. But you're right. Say if a team like Minnesota got in, or that's going to be difficult. I can recall years ago, and Baltimore's thought of as a warm weather city in the American League. 1979 World Series, I woke up the first day of the series, and there was snow on the ground, and the game got canceled. It was just the fields didn't take weather conditions, the poor weather conditions, the way they do now. And the first, I thought I had slept through the World Series, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, great. Let's talk a little bit about the Yankees. Is Joe Girardi staying?
Yeah, Joe's got, I believe, a couple more years on his contract, and I thought he did a very good job this year, considering the fact that all five of his pitchers in the starting rotation at one time or another were on the disabled list, and that just makes things difficult for any team to navigate when you start losing pitchers, and it's kind of become sort of an epidemic throughout baseball where these pitchers are dropping like flies. But I thought that the Yankees, at the beginning of the year, in spring training down in Tampa with them, I really didn't know what to expect from the Yankees. I thought, well, they could be better than they were the previous 2 years when they did make the playoffs and still got over, they played over 500. And I thought Joe did a remarkable job those 2 years because of all the injuries the Yankees had. Well, the injury bug didn't really bite them till towards the end, outside of the pitching staff. When Mark Teixeira went down, that's when the problems really started for the Yankees. And Teixeira was out basically the last month or maybe a month and a half of the season, and he was on his way to being comeback player of the year, over 30 home runs and over 100 runs batted in, protection for Alex Rodriguez in the lineup, and really the big run producer. And all of a sudden he's gone, and the Yankees were very susceptible to left-handed pitching, and it showed. And at the end of the year, they kind of limped into the playoffs, and they were basically in it for 5 minutes. They got knocked out in the first game by Houston, and they were shut out. So hopefully the Yankees need to get younger. The tendency when the older players get hurt, they hurt longer. They don't bounce back. They seem the team as a whole got tired at the end of the year. And you could see it, John, that they weren't going to go very far in the playoffs because of, you know, they were just limping home. I thought Tanaka was a good pitcher last year, but he wasn't as good as he was the year before. And he too, just recently underwent elbow surgery, not the Tommy John that everybody thought he was going to have, but he had a bone spur removed. So who knows how much that bothered him during the course of the year.
You know, it was interesting, too, because I heard you on a couple of broadcasts, especially towards the end when they were playing the Red Sox, and you and your colleagues were voicing that. And I'm wondering, too, and I was talking about this with Mike Maddox yesterday, was that some of these young players – who are rookies, they're not used to playing in September and into October, and they get a little worn out, too. Would you agree with that as well?
Yeah, maybe that's true. I think with the exception of Greg Bird, who played very well. Fans, for fans who don't know him, he was one of the prized prospects in the Yankee organization, was called up. And from his time being called up to the end of the season, he hit more home runs than anybody on the team. I believe he hit 11 home runs from that point on. And I thought he was good. But it appears that next year the Yankees have a dilemma because Bird, well, he plays first base. He was basically called up to replace Teixeira. And then, you know, he won't get the DH because that's A-Rod's job. And when Teixeira's back next year, where's that leave Bird? You know, and unless he plays a different position. But the Yankees seem to don't want him to play any place else but first base or DH. So the rumor is he's going to have to start the season in the minor leagues, which might seem grossly unfair. It does to me in a way, but they might have no other choice. I mean, he's not making the $20-plus million that those other two players are, so he's the logical choice to go back to the minors.
Well, that being said, do you see the Yankees in the offseason being active as far as free agency and trades?
They have a tendency the last couple of years to rely on their younger players like Bird and Severino and Ref Snyder. But I think if the right situation comes along, and everybody's always looking to add pitchers. So if there's a pitcher out there the Yankees could use, one thing, they have a strong bullpen, but like starting pitching, you never have enough relief pitchers. We're finding now in this day and age that starting pitchers do not go very far in the ballgame. So, you know, basically five innings and they're gone. So that means you're going to have guys in the bullpen can pick up the slack and follow through for the remainder of these games, and that means you have to have a strong bullpen. So I can see them adding relief pitchers, if not a starter who they think is a, you know, reasonable guy to have, you know, maybe a third or fourth guy in their rotation. Although you're looking at Nathan Eovaldi coming back. He had some elbow problems at the end of the year, and that's another thing that happened to the Yankees that hurt them this year, mm-hmm. because when he was injured, they had to bring Adam Warren out of the bullpen to go back in the rotation, and that weakened the bullpen, and Eovaldi, when he left, was 14-3 and was really having a good year, and that those two things really hurt the Yankee pitching staff.
You know, and you and I talked about this when we were at Dan Jansen's golf tournament a week ago. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a Red Sox fan, but I love what Girardi did. I love what he did with the bullpen. I love the fact that he would bring Betances in the seventh inning if the mm-hmm. 3, 4, and 5 hitters for the other team were going to be up there. I love the way he did that instead of just holding him on to the eighth inning and just go in there and let him do the two there. Yet I've got buddies, close buddies, who are diehard Yankee fans and are just despise what Joe Girardi did. And I looked at it and I go, how can you say that? At the beginning of the season, these guys weren't even predicted to make the playoffs. And for some reason, I don't know what it is about certain Yankee fans. Is it just in the genetics of a Yankee fan not to like the manager if you don't win the World Series?
Well, that's possibly true. And maybe because Joe Girardi has followed Joe Torre, that's a tough act to follow. Yeah. And maybe in that respect are kind of spoiled. And it would make it difficult for anybody to follow Joe Torre and what he was able to do over the years with the Yankees. Speaking of your Red Sox, John, they're going to be back next year. They, to me, look to be one of the better teams in the league towards the end of the year. They really started to get their acts together. And John Farrell is going to be back. I just read the other day his cancer's in remission, so that's a good thing for the Red Sox and their fans. But I just thought that Bogaerts really came on. Mookie Betts is a great player. Both of these young players, I mean, both of them are like 22 and 23 years old. And these are the type of guys you can play 155 games a year. So you don't have to worry about getting them in and out of the order. If they can figure out the riddle of Hanley Ramirez and if he's going to play first base or is able to do so, that'll be good. I just think the Red Sox are going to be a very formidable team next year. If they can add a pitcher or two, I think they'll really, really be good. So it's not that I'm picking them to win. I don't think I'd ever pick the Red Sox to win, but or at least put it this way, I ever want them to win. But I can see that they'll be tough.
Well, and you guys were really complimentary during your broadcast. When I was listening to you during the last series there, and you were saying that there's two questions I have. One is JBJ. Jackie Bradley Jr. just kind of came out. Did he just come out now, or is this going to be something where it's going to translate into next year, where he's going to continue being this power line drive hitter? He's always been a great ball player in the field. And then the other question I have is Dombrowski. And the fact that he's now the head of player operations, GM, or whatever he is, president, to me, I'm kind of looking at him and I'm going like, you know, he's talking about he wants to go get a David Price. He wants to go get Zach Greinke. It's almost like the Yankees have become the Red Sox and the Red Sox have become the Yankees.
Yeah, it's kind of moving. It's funny how things work out. But when Dave Dombrowski came from Detroit, went to the Red Sox, I knew this was not good for the rest of the Eastern Division because he's a very solid guy. I've known David for years, going back to our days in Montreal when he was a GM there and I was doing their games on radio and TV. A very sharp guy. So I knew once the Red Sox got their man, This is going to be tough for the Yankees and the rest of the teams in the division to deal with him, because he wants to win, and he's got the resources up there with the best teams in baseball. The Red Sox are one of the richer teams, and he can go out and make a nice bid for David Price, or he can if Zach Greinke opts out, he can go after him as well. That's what the Red Sox need is pitching, and he's probably going to do it. I think that I mentioned Betts and Jackie Bradley. You were talking about Jackie Bradley Jr. I think here's a guy who's starting to come into his own with Chili Davis as the hitting coach. Sometimes it takes a little while for these guys to develop, but Jackie Bradley had a big series the last series in New York. Mookie Betts did too. Bogarts had a pretty good series, but in particular Betts and Jackie Bradley, along with Rusney Castillo, that's going to be a strong, talented outfield. I think they're figuring out who's going to play where, because they were kind of moving guys around to see who's going to be playing center field, right field, and left field. If it were up to me, I'd have Jackie Bradley Jr. in center, and I'd have Mookie Betts in right and Castillo in left. But we'll see what happens in spring training. They might change it all around. They have interchangeable parts out there, which is good in case somebody gets hurt.
Well, that's exactly what I said. I said the only time Mookie Betts plays left field is in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, because that's more like right field at Fenway Park. And with all the ground you have to cover. I've always said on our telecast on YES that to play left field in Yankee Stadium, you need center fielder skills or the abilities of a center fielder. And that's what Brett Gardner brings out there. He's really a center fielder playing left field.
Real briefly, and just to get back a little bit to the World Series, you're talking about Jackie Bradley Jr. and how they worked on his hitting. I think he worked on his legs. It's the exact same thing I think you're seeing with Daniel Murphy. All of a sudden, this guy is now a power hitter. He worked on his legs. He's crowding the plate. Do you see that as one kind of similar? And two, how do you pitch to this guy, or is this guy just in his own? You're not going to be able to pitch to him.
Oh, he's in his zone right now. But one thing, this layoff didn't help him. The Mets have had a long layoff here. And when you're in a hot streak, you just want to get back up to the plate as quickly as possible. And all of a sudden now he's out. But one thing that helps him, though, John, he's going to be facing pitchers in Volquez and Johnny Cueto that he has seen before because they were National League pitchers before they came over to the American League and pitching for the Royals. So he knows what to expect from these guys. So I know there's interleague play and all that, but sometimes even in interleague play, you don't play a team for 2-3 years or three at the max, and you don't see these pitchers if they're not in your league or not pitching in any games in interleague against you. So he's seen them. Right now at Murphy, he is on a real streak. You can't make a mistake to him because he's not only going to hit it, he's going to hit it a long way. But I don't think this layoff has helped him any or helped the Mets in that regard. So we'll see what happens starting tonight. I still think it's going to be a very entertaining World Series. I hope the weather holds and we get to play it throughout without any delays and without any postponements because that's when you see the best baseball. I mentioned the World Series in 1979 that I played in. It was a very poor weather World Series, and I don't think the fans got to see the best baseball from the teams, although the series did go 7 games. And the best weather was for Game 7, and that was a very exciting game.
It was a great game. We were talking with Ken Singleton, former Major League player with the Mets, Expos, and Orioles. He is now working for the YES Network covering the New York Yankees. Hey, let's get into one of my favorite events of the year. It is the Ken Singleton Celebrity Golf Classic for Cool Kids. I go every year. Thank you for inviting me. It is a great event for many reasons. First, we raise money for kids with cancer. Talk about the Cool Kids campaign.
Well, it was actually started by Chris Federico and Rob Belanger years ago, and they wanted to get something done because Rob's dad, Mark Belanger, one of my all-time favorite teammates, the most organized teammate I was ever around, passed away due to cancer, lung cancer. Mark was, unfortunately, he was a smoker, and it ultimately killed him. But Rob and Chris started this tournament, and it was a tournament with Mark's name on it. And they came to me a couple of years later and asked me if I would host a tournament. And both my parents died from cancer, So I felt, in a way, to honor my parents, I would get involved with the cool kids. And it's been going great. This was the seventh year that we've had the tournament. You've been kind enough to come up for I can't count how many years, but we always enjoy you being with us, John, and lending your expertise and helping out with all the fans in the tournament itself. And all the celebs that come from all over the country, a lot of my former teammates show up, and it's been growing every single year. And now it's kind of advanced into Dan Jansen's tournament as well, which was a lot of fun a couple of weeks ago, or about a week or so ago in Charlotte. And we had a great time. It was good seeing you there too. So it's growing. All the proceeds go directly to the kids who are dealing with cancer issues and their families. The services that the cool kids provide are all free services, so it's gone well, and I'm really proud to be a part of it, and we're proud to have you with us too.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's a great event, and you as a host you make it just a fabulous event for everybody to be there. Certainly, a lot of your old Orioles players are there, which helps quite a bit. Even some Baltimore Colts are there. Lydell Mitchell actually shows up. I got a chance to see him, and he looks great. I mean, for a guy in his late 60s, I mean, he's in great shape. He looks like he could still play.
Yeah, well, Lydell, actually we have a connection. Lydell went to school with my brother at Penn State University. And my brother was on the track team. Lydell, of course, was an All-American football player. He and Franco Harris were on the same team. You can imagine they had a pretty good football team up at Penn State. And now my daughter goes to Penn State. So, my niece, my brother's daughter, graduated from Penn State. So we have a Penn State tradition. And, of course, whenever I see Lydell, he says, say hello to my brother. He knows my brother. And, in fact, this weekend I went to the Penn State-Maryland game, which was held here in Baltimore this year. And Penn State, it was an exciting game. It was kind of turnover filled, but Penn State won by a score of 31-30. So it was my daughter. I drove her back to school with her roommates who came down with her to see the game. Everybody was happy and singing on the way back, and I'm sure campus was all aglow from this win over Maryland. But they've got Michigan and Michigan State coming up pretty soon here.
Yeah, and the Big Ten's actually getting a nice resurgence there, especially with Michigan coming back and having
Penn State too, for that matter. They're bowl eligible now after this win.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and just another, and because I do a lot of food and wine stories. The culinary delight at your tournament is fabulous. I mean, we get a chance to get the crab, the Maryland crab. You put on such a great culinary show, and we love it. And a lot of it's really from the Marriott there in Towson, correct?
Yeah, it's fantastic. The Marriott really does a great job for us. They not only set everything up, they bring the food, basically what they serve in their own restaurants at the hotel. And it's just a wonderful situation. I know there might be a lot of people out there who haven't actually had Maryland crab cakes or Maryland crab, where you have to actually pick the meat off yourself. I kind of go the short route. I go for the crab cakes. It's a lot easier, not quite as messy. But the food is great. We couldn't ask for a better setup. The Marriott people, not only they put up our out-of-town guests, they basically turn the hotel over to us and they couldn't have been any better. So we really appreciate their help over the years.
Not only do they put us up, but they put up with us.
That too. You know, they we have all kinds of events at the hotel, celebrity bartending events. We have entertainment there. And then we have the crab feast and the crab cakes and all the other delights at my house. And we're looking forward to doing it again next year. It's going to be in June next year. We're moving it up. So I think it's the last weekend in June. That's when we're going to have it. Of course, you can, for people out there who are interested, you can go to coolkidscampaign.org and get all the information about the Cool Kids and what the Cool Kids is all about. And it's a wonderful organization. I'm very proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's great. And then also, folks, if you want to, you can go to my John Daly Golf Show. So I've done a number of videos on what goes on at the events there, so you can actually see it as well, in addition to coolkidscampaign.org, as Ken just mentioned. Before I let you go, are you honing your golf game now because you don't have anything to do till spring training?
Well, John, actually, my group finished third in a tournament, in my tournament. And then I went down to Dan Jansen's tournament, and I finished third in that tournament as well. So it was a lot of fun. Somehow I got to break that mold and get out of that third place, whatever. But you're right. As long as the weather holds here in Maryland, and it's starting to cool off a bit now. Actually, I went out this morning, and there was frost on the ground. So that means my wife Suzanne and I, now that we're kind of empty nesters, we have a chance to go to Florida. And after the holidays, I think that's where we're going to head, because we have a place down there. And we'll just, ride out the rest of the winter and go on into spring training. And and then we'll get ready for the tournament again, too. In fact, we're going to have a meeting this week about next year's tournament. So I'm looking forward to going into the Cool Kids offices with Chris Federico and getting started again.
Cool. I'm looking forward to hearing about that as well. And then also, if you're driving down, I'm right on the way. So let me know if you're going to be in the Myrtle Beach area. We'll take you in and get a couple of rounds of golf with you down here.
That'd be great, because you all have a lot warmer weather than we have here in Maryland.
I don't know that much warmer, but it'll be warmer.
Yeah, well, basically, it's definitely warmer.
All right. He is Ken Singleton, former Major League player with the Mets, Expos, and Orioles. He is now broadcaster on the YES Network for the New York Yankees. Ken, as always, thank you so much.
John, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for your help over the years as well, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right, and we'll check in with you after the World Series as well.
Okay,
All right. And, folks, don't forget to listen to my other interview with Mike Maddox, the pitching coach of the Texas Rangers. Everybody, enjoy the series.
For more on John Daly, including his blog postings and instructional videos, go to informnotinflamed.com.